present the news quiz with your chairman, Barry Took.
Hello and welcome again to the news quiz. We start with a headline from last week's Doncaster Advertiser, read by Brian Perkins.
Police find ecstasy in man's Y-fronts.
Thank all of you who sent us that. Now let's meet the teams. Would you welcome, please, on my right, Francis Ween and Clive Anderson. Facing them on my left, Alan Corran and Rupert Allison, MP. As always, Francis, you get the first question, and it's this. Who got into a paddy trying to move out of the middle?
I could be wrong, but my guess is that this is to do with Mr. Pantsdown, is it?
Yes.
And he decided that he very much liked the sound of this new Labour Party we hear so much about, mm-hmm. which is very much in favour of privatising things and closing hospitals and... No, sorry, that's the other one. It's something like that, anyway, and... Nobody can tell the difference between them anymore. So he said, why don't we go the whole hog and be friends? And we can all stand for nothing in the middle together. But then his deputy, this man Beath, said he didn't like it. He said the Liberals had a long and heroic record of independence and complete failure, and it would be a pity to spoil it now. I think that's right.
Yes, these were the Liberal Democrats who seemed ready to scrap their policy of being equidistant from both major parties. Equidistant in this context means several miles behind both. Several Liberal Democrats say that if Labour policies have moved closer to theirs, why not support them? Well, Labour MPs say, how come Lib Dems know what our policies are when we don't? Clive, nice to have you back on the programme. Your question is this. Who survived with a healthy margin despite a couple of revolting members?
Oh, this is the great health debate.
Yes.
I have to spit when I mention her name in my house, because my wife works at a distinguished hospital called St. Bartholomew's. She's been there for 800 years. founded 1123, or shortly before lunch, by something called Rahir, who was a combination... I happen to know a bit about this. Who was a combination... Strange combination of part court jester, part religious figure, sort of Norman St. John Stevens, and... And when the various London MPs, who are for the moment a Conservative, noticed that all their hospitals are being closed down, in addition to St. Bartholomew's, which has been there for 800 years, they threatened to actually revolt. And, of course, in the feeble way of Conservative MPs, Mr. Allison, they couldn't quite bring themselves to actually vote against the government, so they voted to support Virginia Bottomley, who they all think is rather awful, and they wouldn't even sit with her in Parliament.
Oh,
they would have to stand on her own, except for her husband, who's a great support.
Oh,
anyway, so have I mentioned St. Bartholomew's Hospital and it's going to be closed down,
yes.
Isn't it? Dreadful. Otherwise, I can't go home tonight.
This was the Commons vote on London hospital closures, won by the government despite a threatened revolt by backbenchers. After consulting constituents, they showed genuine concern for the health of the majority. Sorry, the health of their majority. Earlier, Mrs. Bottomley was pictured demonstrating how cycling can restore one to health. If you feel under the weather, simply hop on your bike and cycle 300 miles to your nearest outpatients. Rupert, I have to say welcome to the news, because I know it's your first time here. You're very welcome. And your question is this. Whose atomic theory will save us £20 with a warm glow?
Now, I think this is to do with privatisation of the nuclear industry, isn't it? Either that or else it's Will Carling and Eric Cantona. I can't decide which it is.
I'd stick with the nuclear, if I were you.
Fine. I think that... we've suddenly discovered that nuclear power only has a life of 25 years, and we've worked out that it's about another 3 years to go, so that if we flog all the power stations straight away, then it won't be the government's responsibility to decommission them. And so the government is neatly, first of all, pocketing the money, and secondly, persuading the private sector to close them all down, which I think is an absolutely terrific coup of policy.
And in 3 years, you won't be the government anyway, so...
I don't think I've ever been mistaken for the government, thank you.
Right. These are Michael Heseltine's plans to sell off 8 atomic power stations. His unclear policy. It's supposed to save every family in Britain £20 a year, although observers say the figures don't add up because of the cost of decommissioning old Magnox stations. He's brought in a team of experts to help us. 2 heads are better than 1. That's a secret he learned from watching sheep born around Windscale. Alan, will you have a listen? I'd forgotten how good that was. Beatles back in the USSR. And your question is, Alan, who saw a red flag instead of tanks for the memory?
I fear this is our own John Major and every other head of state who went to Russia to see them celebrate peace, love, and all the other bogus things we were supposed to be celebrating when we really wanted to say how we trashed the Bosch. but we couldn't say that because Cole was over here eating his two dinners at the Guildhall when... And we didn't want to spoil the fat Hun's appetite. But they order these things differently in Russia. So they got out the biggest wartime parade they had in 30 years just to show Cole, if he did it again, what would happen to him again. And our mimsy buggers wouldn't turn up because they said, this is really rather awful, let us go and see Doves and stuff like that, and let us pledge ourselves to a new Europe full of peace. And all that stuff. Meanwhile, the Russians were getting into their tanks and flying their aircraft over and priming their bombs. Good on them, I say.
the great draft dodger went, didn't he? I mean, there is a sort of curious paradox of all these characters saluting the one guy who's done everything to avoid going into the US Army.
Well, they wouldn't have him in the Russian Army either, I suppose.
What I like about that, since you've raised the issue of Forrest Clinton, I was watching the news tonight, and did you see that the Russians had arranged to give them a present, which was a brass statue of Bill and Hillary, but he is not allowed to accept expensive gifts over a certain value, and this went over it, so they chipped out Hillary. Great. The Russians have a wonderful sense of humour, which is much neglected.
These were the V-Day commemorations in Moscow, and the attendance of John Major and Bill Clinton marred only by two unfortunate events. The attendance of John Major and Bill Clinton. They declined to join in the Red Square celebrations with Boris Yeltsin, where he watched nine army divisions march past. They were actually only three, but Boris saw nine. We've come to the end of the first round, and as is usual on the news quiz, it's a tie at four all at this time. We start round two with an apology in the Borneo Bulletin.
In yesterday's report about restriction on import of chicken, the name of the permanent secretary at the Ministry of Industry and Primary Resources should have read Dato Paduka Awang Haji Ahmad Bin Pehin Orang Kaya Digadong Seri Diraja Dato Laila Utama Haji Awang Mod Yusuf. The error is regretted.
Well done, Brian. And thank you, Phil Spires of Brunei, for that. Francis, your turn again. Who did the right thing after 14 years being gauche?
I think this is the Conservatives' great election victory, isn't it?
It is. Which,
as you may have guessed, can't have been over here. Must have been somewhere else where Conservatives are rather popular. Well, not that popular. I think he got about 52%.
He's not very conservative either.
He's not very conservative either. He's been lurching all over the shop. Unlike British politicians, of course, who are men of principle, as we know. And he was elected president, Monsieur Jacques Chirac, just beating Monsieur Lionel Jospin, as he's called.
Right.
Who is a sort of grey man who is obviously a born loser. And
why did you look at me when you said that?
No, I was just thinking. It's hard to imagine any English parallel, really. I'm sure one will turn up sooner or later.
I'm sure you will. These were the French presidential elections when voters kicked out their socialist leader after 14 years and replaced him with a right-winger. So in the usual spirit of European unity, whatever we're thinking about doing here, the French have to do it exactly the opposite first. Monsieur Chirac's success was welcomed by Mr. Major, who was fed up with being kicked around Europe by a socialist. It'll make a nice change to be kicked around by conservatives. Clive, who was kicked into touch by those out of touch?
Now, this could be something to do with Will Carling.
It could indeed be, yes.
Who blurted out something about the administration in rugby being old farts, which caused a bit of a stink, and he's... Then he apologised, and then they fired him. Well, they said they had to let him go, and then they all rallied round, and all the players said that he had to be the captain, and so the old administrators said he could come back as long as he apologised. But he had already apologised, so it was a great sort of negotiation deal, a bit like a sort of common market negotiation. But they're now not, they're officially not old farts.
That's right.
No, they're advanced gas-cooled reactors. Yeah. which Michael Heseltine is busy decommissioning and flogging off.
I think the best collateral bit of all that was turning on the set and watching all those decorous young women with lapel badges, like Zina Badawi and Carol Barnes, and Anna Ford, having to say old farts. Very enjoyable. Don't you wish Carling had said to them what he really thought they were?
Rupert, stand by. Here's a piece of music for you.
My mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed. Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house, in the middle of our...
Well, it doesn't take much to know that was called Our House by Madness. And your question is, which punters ended up in the red thanks to the black horse?
Now, I think that this is some advice that was given by the bank that isn't a listening bank, but it's the one that's run by a black horse. Is that right?
That's right.
It is extraordinary. People would believe mortgage advice and loans and insurance advice given by a horse pretending to be Black Beauty, prancing around the Yorkshire Dales. I find it absolutely bizarre. But I think that they came to a sticky end, and now that they've taken the advice that they were given by this horse, and now they are suing the horse. Mm-hmm. And Lloyds Bank may have a part in this.
They may well.
But I would like to say to my Lloyds Bank manager, incidentally, that I think it could well be Barclays or NatWest.
This refers to Julia Verity and Richard Spindler, who are suing Lloyds Bank for lending them too much money. Lloyds Bank are counter-suing for debts of £150,000, that's £100,000 in interest, plus another £50,000 to write the letters to tell them about the interest. Alan, your question now. Which early bird caught a mole who turned out to be a rat?
Well, I hate to give the great family any more pain, but this is about the shafting of Fleet Street, the News of the World, by Princess Diana's brother, yes, who has a friend. I suppose if you have to choose your friends rather carefully, but I mean, he calls him a friend called Blumenfeld, or is alleged to be called Blumenfeld. He was an alleged friend who he rather suspected of telling stories about his missus, who is not very well. And in order to trap this bloke, he told him an entirely bogus story about leaving his wife. Can't understand how anybody would believe a story like that about a spender. Anyway, about him leaving his wife and going to America and taking the children to start up a new life as a disc jockey. This, of course, went into the News of the World, which is a responsible organ, and checked everything 45 times, and Rupert Murdoch has gone spare and says he must fall to his knees and kiss the hem of Spencer's garment and apologise. Is that right?
The scores in round two are still tied at 8-all. We start round three with an item from the Sunday Express.
10 people were injured when fighting erupted at an anger management seminar in Madrid. Police said it was triggered when the participants, psychiatrists and their patients, discussed which methods were most effective in helping keep their tempers.
Well, thank you, Brian. Cheered us up no end. Francis, who gained £75 after not losing £40?
Oh, I do know this. It's a woman in Tyneside.
Yep.
Who weighed about 12 and a half stone, wanted to lose weight, went to a fitness clinic where her personal trainer was somebody called Veronica, I think. She was called Versatile Veronica or something of the kind. So she had one of these funny names that they have, breakfast TV fitness people are always called, you know, the radiator or the incinerator or something. And she was called, I think, Versatile Veronica, and she was very versatile indeed, because after a few weeks of fitness classes, the 12 and a half stone woman was weighed and told by Veronica that she was now 9 stone. So she went home to tell her family the good news. And she said, "It's marvellous, I've lost 3 stones. And they said, "No, you haven't, you're as fat as you ever were." And she said, no, I've lost 45 pounds or whatever it is. And they put her on the bathroom scales and said, "No, you've actually put on 1/2 stone. You're now heading towards 13 stone. So she sued in Newcastle, and she's won £75. So yeah. I suppose by the time she got home, she discovered she'd lost £10.
She got a money back, didn't she?
This was Rita Richardson, who was told at her weekly slimming club that she'd lost £40 when she was actually putting on weight. Her instructor, Veronica Plank, was ordered to pay a refund after she weighed Rita every week and noted healthy reductions and told her never to use any other scales. Mrs. Plank claimed in court that Rita really did lose £40, must have put 45 back on again in 5 days without knowing. That passive eating is a terrible thing. Clive, here's a piece of music for you. That was Coronation Scots, and your question is, who can take the high bunk or the low bunk and still be in Scotland at 40? Oh.
Gosh, this is very cryptic. Coronation Scot is clearly a reference to the Queen Mother.
Yes.
And this is to do... I feel sorry for you as a Conservative MP, because we're just getting at the government and the Conservatives tonight, but you're so keen on closing everything down at the moment. And there's a nice little line that you can go through the most beautiful scenery in the world or something, and you have to sleep while you go through it. So you can imagine any old scenery, I suppose. And they want to close it down naturally. British Railways naturally want to close down railways. They wouldn't want to expand the business or anything. And they've tried doing it, and instead of just doing it in a straightforward way, it's all done in a devious way, and they were going to pretend to run railway services in the middle of the night only, or and wake all the sleepers up, and then nobody would travel on it, and then they could close it down. So somebody rushed off to court and said, "Is this right?" And the judge said, "No, you're breaking all the rules, and you'll have to keep it going for a bit, and if you want to close it down, you'll have to go through all the proper procedures." Whereupon British Rail and ScotRail say, "Oh, that'll waste an awful lot of money." But it's your fault for doing it wrong in the first place, isn't it? That's the story, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
The sleeper service to Fort William.
Right. Yes, the decision to save the Euston to Fort William train was warmly backed by Virginia Bottomley. Anything that takes 600 beds out of London every day can't be all bad. Rupert. Who had money to burn, even though it wasn't theirs?
Well, I can think of several candidates for that on the opposition benches, but I suspect that this is a different kind of robbery. I think that this was Mr. Securico's van that was attacked by a bunch of villains, and they got their oxyacetylene torch, and this was something out of an Ealing movie, really. You can imagine Peter Sellers being there trying to switch on the oxyacetylene. They managed to finally open up the back of the Securico van. When they got in there, they found a bonfire. They'd managed to set alight £3 or 4 million, which was actually going to... It was destined, I think, for privatisation of the nuclear industry. And as a result of that, there is another government crisis.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely right. Beautifully answered. Police say that the gang opened the van like a can of pilchards, by which they mean they tried to pull back the door, but the handle broke off. Then, as you so rightly say, they used high-power cutting equipment to make a hole in the side. The temperature went to several thousand degrees centigrade and set light to the money. They reduced millions of pounds to worthless piles in seconds and have been charged with impersonating the Chancellor of the Exchequer. Alan, who was tailor-made not to be amused?
This is not the those three people that appeared like that looked like a snooker set on the balcony.
No.
I kept waiting for someone to come in and pot them. We three queens of Orient are. Is it Princess Diana? And
no, it isn't.
He's struggling, isn't he?
It's much earlier than
that. Yes, he can't do it.
Can you help out, Rupert?
Yes, I'm convinced that this is a James Hewitt story. I think that he saw his girlfriend being kissed by her husband and has taken umbrage. He's bought a new pair of job paws. Isn't this right?
No.
Well, it's sort of like Princess Di, except it's Queen Victoria.
It is.
Oh, we were close.
But it turns out that she was much the same, because I never really thought of her as a clothes person, but it turns out she was a great shopper, always popping off to get designer miniskirts and cowboy boots and things. And her tailors have revealed, a bit late, that she never paid her bills. Why they reveal it now, 100 years later, I can't imagine. But they've now chosen, I suppose, there's some 100-year rule on royal tailors' bills. And it was rather oddly, I think it's a gents' tailors. It's one of those sort of rather grand old gents' tailors in the West End that's been there since the dawn of time.
What are you saying, that Queen Victoria was a cross-dresser?
Well, yes.
No wonder this has been kept secret for 100 years.
It's the revelation that Queen Victoria was a bit slow in paying her tailor's bill. Henry Poole and Company of Savile Row presented a bill for £14.17 in 1865, which wasn't paid until over 2 years later. They'd made full-length coats for the family in blue beaver, which explains why you don't see many blue beavers about these days. The scores at the end of round three have taken an amazing turn, ladies and gentlemen, because Alan and Rupert are 10, but Francis and Clive have leapt into the lead with 13. Before we start the final round, here's a news item from the Daily Telegraph.
Police talked a suicidal man down from the Golden Gate Bridge in San Francisco yesterday, but when he made a move with an object that looked like a gun, they shot him.
Welcome to the Brian Perkins Show. Anyway, thank you, Samantha Lee of Northwood, for sending us that. Francis, here's a piece of music for you.
Everybody has a summer holiday, doing things they always wanted to. So we're going on a summer holiday to make our dreams come true. For me and you.
Well, the question is, whose summer holiday will be a big family affair?
I thought we got enough of Cliff Richard on VE Day, personally, but I suppose some people are hungry for more. I think this is a woman who has booked a package holiday for her family, and her family turns out to consist of 111 people, I think. They're all going off to Spain. She just wandered into the travel agent and said, I want to book a family holiday in Spain, rent a few apartments. And she says they do this every year. She's got grandparents, cousins, this, that, the other. They sounds almost as enjoyable as summer with the Queen at Balmoral. I'm sure it'll be a marvellous time. Extended families together always create such joy, don't they?
I'll be sure that she's obviously a lottery winner, because apparently when you win the lottery, you discover cousins from thousands of miles.
Well, yes. This concerns Jill Pullen, who booked a holiday for her family of 103 to all go together to Spain. Most of them have never been abroad before, and the man at the passport office, who does the initial letter P, says he should be back at work as soon as this writer's cramp clears up. The Pullens are Portsmouth Football Club fans and plan to take a look at FC Barcelona's ground. It'll be a great treat for them to visit a ground where they can all get in at the same time. Five. Whose cheek took the biscuit after stealing everything else?
No, I have to work this out from first principles, not having done my preparation on this one. It sounds awfully to me like it might be a nudist shoplifter who, having nowhere else to hide the purloined biscuits, inserted them in his mouth. That's the best I could. I don't think yeah. I know this story. Let me just check that.
This wasn't the burglars who then rang up and said, "We'll sell you back all the stuff."
Yes,
we've
it
stolen,
is. That's
it?
What it was.
Now it's the burglars who. Stole everything, wasn't it? And they rang up and said, you can have it back into the price of a biscuit.
It happened in Brighton, where a couple were burgled by a gang who offered to sell them back everything they'd stolen. They received a call from someone who said, hello, it's the burglars, we got all your stuff. The couple did offer to pay by check, but the burglars wouldn't take it without some form of identification. Rupert, your time for a question again, and it's this. Who is putting a gleam in Nelson's eyes?
Now this is the last remaining jewel, I think, in the British crown that hasn't been privatised. I think that this is the family jewellery standing erect in Trafalgar Square, and it has caught the fancy of a Chinese newspaper man, the sort of equivalent of Zheng Deng Rupert Murdoch.
Yes.
And this character has decided that he is going to floodlight Nelson for some obscure reason.
Well, it's a known
Absolutely
reason.
Absolutely right.
In return for that, there are going to be big signs up saying, read the Hong Kong Sporting Life.
That's
true.
Yeah.
This is the news that Nelson's column is to be floodlit and sponsored by a Chinese language newspaper, the Tsing Tao Daily. From now on, it will be known as Nelson's column. New lamps will highlight the column and the lions, and there'll even be special lighting to show off the pigeons. Or is there now known number 27? Alan, who went nuts over new power for the old model?
Tell me the question again. It's about nuts and power.
Yes,
it is. This must be about Meccano.
It is about Meccano, yes.
Well, it seems. I mean, even as you speak, I can feel that pain in the fingers we used to have from doing up the nuts like that. When you built... And the amazing thing about Meccano was that nothing you built ever looked like anything. And your father would come in and you had these 9 plates and a pulley and a wheel on it. And he'd say, "What is it?" And you'd say, "It's an aeroplane." And then you put the pulley on the other end and he'd come in the next night and he'd say, "What is it?" And you would say, "It's the Empire State Building." For years, Hornby and his rat bags used to sell this stuff to children in the belief that children would actually make things that looked like anything else, but they never did. So in order to facilitate this now, they're giving them power tools. So instead of building things, they can go out and be driller killers. They'll make videos. It'll be the Meccano mechanical bolt cutter mystery.
You're it's absolutely
the
right.
I'm Meccano electric nut fixer.
It is.
I cross my legs as I say that, but that's what it does.
But well done, Alan. And before we reveal the final scores, let's see what cuttings the team brought along. Francis, have you brought a cutting for us?
Yeah. This is from the Hampstead and Highgate Express, and it's about the problem they've been having up there with the rising tide of Rolex robberies. The latest victim was Lebanese businessman Tufik Melki, who was robbed of his £15,000 Rolex watch outside the Regent's Park Marriott Hotel. He is furious. "What has happened?" he said. "This used to be a great country. How can you live in a country like that? In Lebanon, yes, they kill each other and shoot each other over politics, but you don't see petty thefts like this."
Have you got something for us?
Yes, this is from the Advertiser, sent by somebody called H.J. Yates. I don't think I understand it, actually, but a man indecently exposed himself to a Cranley woman in St. Nicholas Churchyard on Saturday evening. Police say he appeared from behind some bushes as the woman walked by. The man is described as of slim build, wearing grey or faded black jeans, and is believed to be left-handed.
There's no answer to that, really. Alan, have you brought a cutting for us?
Yes. This is a New Zealand paper, the Wellington Star. It says, "Yesterday, television came at last to Ruanuku, remotest island in the Marquesas group, but only briefly. After watching the set in their communal hall for 3 hours, the 89 islanders held a council meeting and threw it in the sea."
How appropriate. Well, I think I can give you the final scores now, yes? Alan and Rupert have scored an excellent 14, but Francis and Clive have scored an even more excellent 17, and are this week's winners. Before we leave you, here's a cutting from The Big Issue, sent in by Roger Dunkley of Putney.
Wayne Black, 29, of Lincoln, whose attempts to persuade police that he wasn't Wayne Black were foiled by the fact that he had "I'm Wayne Black" tattooed on his forehead.
And with that, goodbye!
Taking part in the news quiz were Alan Corrin, Francis Wheen, Clive Anderson and Rupert Allison MP. The chairman was Barry Took and the news was read by me, Brian Perkins. The programme was written by Ian Pattinson. The producer was Alad Evans.